The Zone is presented by Guarantee Foods, delivering all-natural food to Midwestern families since 1958. Enjoy healthier food, more free time, free delivery, and better value. Go to GuaranteedFoods.com.
All right, Friday edition of The Zone. One more hour to go. Hanging out at Trailside RV off I-70, exit 24 in Grain Valley. TrailsideRV.com is where you can go and check out all of the cool things they've got going on. So we're letting you know about the open house tomorrow, 9 o'clock in the morning, for the 40th anniversary. They are celebrating the 40th anniversary here at Trailside RV, and they are passing along those celebrations to you, the consumer, and savings. And other cool things going on tomorrow. There'll be parts and service seminars, gifts for each family. They've got door prize drawings, accessories, etc. And, of course, special discounts for in-stock parts and accessories. They've got special finance incentives. They've got special anniversary pricing on all RVs in stock. They've got super manager special discounts on certain models. That is all here at Trailside RV, the leader in premium RVs, campers, RV parts, service repairs, and, of course, more. And it is the 40th anniversary, the open house starting tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock in the morning. Sterling Holmes, Jason Anderson, Dylan Michaels heading up until 2 o'clock. We got the cuts later on this hour. Thank you to Matt Derrick, who hung out with us for the 11 o'clock hour and also essentially Dylan the noon hour. Considering how long that first segment went. We talked some Royals baseball in the first hour. We even talked a little NBA with the 76ers. Knicks. I apologize, Sterling.
We didn't talk
Knicks,
that.
Winning. But we talked about Jalen Brunson and how interesting it is of what he's turned out to be versus maybe what the thought around him as he could be in the NBA, being a 33rd pick. And then signing a contract with the Knicks that was almost like double what he would have signed for if the Mavericks had offered for 55. It didn't happen. But we talked a little bit about that. And then also, you know, I didn't see it with Jalen Brunson. I thought he was going to be a nice player. And talked a little bit about guys that maybe we missed on or thought were going to be good or and wasn't. Or thought were going to be bad and ended up being really good. So, like Justin Herbert, I mean, we'll see if he ever wins anything in L.A., but I wasn't a huge fan of Justin Herbert coming out of Oregon. And I was fine with the Chargers taking Justin Herbert. I'm like, cool, go ahead, take Justin Herbert. That's awesome. You know, I'm good with it. You know, it's a in division, and you don't have to worry about that quarterback. He's been better than I thought, you know, he was going to be. But he also doesn't have a playoff win yet. And it's already working on his second contract without a playoff win. So we'll see if he can get that done. And whether wins go to quarterbacks or not, whatever. You know, it's that's one that I didn't think was going to be all that good. He's better than I thought he would be, certainly. Bo Nix, I'm pretty convinced, is not going to be all that good. I'm not a Drake May fan either, so I'm fine with Denver taking Bo Nix.
I was actually pretty on board with you with Justin Herbert. I remember when they drafted him, I go, oh, what idiots. Sure. Yeah, that'll work out for you, Chargers. And then little did we know, he might be a great player, but they are a cursed franchise. So it really didn't matter who they drafted. I did find something fun because when you pulled that up and we were going to talk about that, I actually pulled up my 2021 Chiefs draft grades that I gave out. It was one of the last articles I ever wrote. And nice. I pulled it up to see how I did on my 2021 draft grades. And, Jason, I nailed them.
Did you? Like, is that being sarcastic? Or
no,
you're,
this,
you're
is the best,
serious?
This is the best thing I've ever done. I gave Bolton a B-plus grade. I gave Creed an A. I said Joshua Kando was my least favorite pick. Gave him a C-minus. Noah Gray, I said, would be just a average backup, B-minus grade. Cornell Powell, I said, has upside to be Chris Conley or DeMarcus Robinson, so kind of nailed that one. And then Trey Smith gave an A. So I feel like I somehow nailed that back in the day, which is the... I feel confident now. I feel like I know what I'm talking about.
There you go. Nice job. And you know what? Noah Gray, a guy who's been fine. He's been a fine backup tight end for the Chiefs the last couple of years, but he's going into the final year of his contract, and I love the pick of Jared Wiley, and a guy that can come in and learn under Travis Kelce, figure some things out, hopefully learn the offense pretty quickly. And in the next segment, I want to get into some of the things of what Jared Wiley might offer in what we saw last year with the Chiefs in 12 and 13 personnel and the lack thereof in success, whether that be no threaded wide receivers or 13 personnel included Blake Bell. We'll talk about that. But Laird Veach, newest athletics director for the Missouri Tigers, was on with the Border Patrol this morning and was an interesting interview. If you want to go and check that out, go check out the podcast, certainly after this show's over or after the program's over. Or, you know, when you're mowing the lawn or whatever this weekend, go check out the podcast with Laird Veach and the Border Patrol. But a couple of things that I heard from that I wanted to play back, a couple of clips. One of those, you know, we know that football drives the bus or the RV, since we're here at Trailside RV. We know that football and athletics is the front window, the front door to the house of the university. And football is vital. And what Missouri is doing in football right now is a little unexpected from where I thought they would be with Eli Drinkwitz, you know, a couple of years ago, my concerns being what they were, and him showing that, no, he's not only a good recruiter, he turned that team into a winning team and got to double-digit wins and what they were able to accomplish last year. And now what the excitement level is moving forward. But you've got a new athletic director. And that athletic director, he played football at K-State, so you know you have that background. But it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be somebody that appreciates or views it a certain way. So let's hear what Laird Veach thinks about the football program and how important football and Eli Drinkwitz being successful is to the university.
You can't shy away from that. I mean, there's no question that football has to be successful. It is ultimately what, you know, it drives success across the board. And if our football program is doing well, then that's going to position the rest of our program for that. You know, from a financial standpoint, from a brand standpoint. So we've got to be willing to embrace that and take advantage of having a coach like Drink there who, you know, my impression of Drink, what really has stuck out to me is he's a CEO coach. And, you know, he's extremely intelligent, sees beyond the X's and O's, recognizes that he has to manage a massive organization, be very strategic, and very aggressive in the competitive environment we're in. So he's just really well-wired and positioned to be successful in this era. So, you know, that my job will come in to come in quickly to help him, you know, to come alongside him, to support him. Ultimately, in our profession, in college athletics in particular, coaches drive success. So it's my job to come in and support what he's doing and, you know, come alongside that because he's clearly got a very, very good vision, and it's working, right? So how can I come along and help that?
A couple things with that. At the end there, I want to sort of go in reverse with that. When he said, my job is to come in quickly and help him, support him, and coaches are the ones that drive success. And you'd better understand that. I think every athletics director certainly understands that, you know, in college athletics, the coach is essentially the superstar. You know, we talked about before the NCAA tournament, if KU could make a run in the tournament, depending on health, obviously we weren't aware of what Kevin McCullough was going through or, you know, Hunter Dickinson. We didn't think McCullough would be shut down at the time we were talking about it. And we said, you know, hey, the Chiefs struggled. And then they turned it on, and they won a Super Bowl. But they have Patrick Mahomes. And my point that I made is, well, KU's got Patrick Mahomes. It's just Bill Self, you know. And yes, he's the coach, and the players have to go out there and play. So maybe it's not a direct analogy or apples to apples, but it's as close as you get to the premier player year in and year out as you're going to get in college is the head coach. So what's the support? What's the help that's there for him, for Eli Drinkwitz? It's been there with NIL. I do think DRF was offering as much support to Eli Drinkwitz, or maybe she wasn't, and the board of curators or whoever, you know, has this group that's like, you know, you're spending money elsewhere. We want you to spend it with Eli Drinkwitz. We'll see, but I'm interested in what Laird Veach is going to do and money that may be invested in the football program and the finances and the brand are about football, and it has to be successful to continue to do that. What I would wonder, though, moving forward, Eli Drinkwitz goes from, you know, 6-7, or excuse me, 5-5, to 6-7, to 6-7, to 11-2. A massive jump. And I hope that is somewhere near sustainability. That the 11-2 was, okay, see, give it time, give it time, give it time. Now we've got the players. We've stacked some recruiting classes together. We're going to go out there and show you that we're good enough to go and win, and they go 11-2. And if next year they get to 9 wins or and see what happens, you don't have a fallback to 5 or 6 wins. Like, you know, Gary Pinkel, when he was rolling, you know, once they got to 2005, it was, you know, 7, 8, 12, 10, 8, 10, 8. There was the 5-7 year, the first year in the SEC when they were ravaged by injuries, but then back to 12 wins, 11 wins. Like, there was one down year when they were just destroyed by injuries. Their offensive line was decimated in fall camp, and it was like, this team is screwed going into the SEC with third-string offensive linemen. Well, good luck with that. And they struggled. What's the definition of success? And if football, quote, has to be successful for the athletics department to maintain its health for finances and brand, how long of a tenure do you give somebody if they've shown they can do it at 11-2, but if they fall back to the pack and they're back to 6-7 or maybe every once in a while an 8-win season? That would be the question. I hope he never has to get to that, Sterling. I hope it's never a question of like, okay, so what do you do? I hope that's not the case. And if they keep paying Eli and it's like, okay, well, it has to be successful. It is successful with Eli. We're not going to let you leave because we know it has to be successful. That's one aspect of it. But the flip side is, I hope it doesn't get to it, but is there, Laird Veach, a more of a sense of urgency if there's something going on that you're not seeing the success quickly or as sustaining? Do you find somebody else because you're in the SEC?
Yeah, and again, as you're mentioning, what constitutes success? Is 8 wins, is that enough if you're consistently going 8-4, or is that not going to be good enough? Again, you are in the SEC. If you go 8-4 this year, I think all Mizzou fans would say that's a massive step back from last year, right? I mean, Jason, I feel like you'd have to say that that's a step back if you won 11 and then you only won 8 this season. And there are
with the returning players and the recruits coming in, yes, I think that would be viewed as a disappointing season.
And I think that's a real possibility. But like in the grand scheme of things, is an 8-win season constitute a disappointment if you did that back to back years? I think we'd all constitute that as a disappointment. But I also thought it was interesting when you talked about Eli as a CEO coach,
yeah.
Right? Well, that's the new name of the game. In the NFL, some with Dan Campbell and Raheem Morris, right? That they're known as CEO coaches, where they hire the right people. They're just at the top of the food chain. Well, Eli kind of gave up some of those play calling,
so yeah.
Because that was a struggle, right? We're sitting here going, why is the offense struggling? You were this offensive genius, and now you come here and you can't get it done. When he started to say, you know what, I'm going to hire the right people. I'll let the defense do their job. I'll let the offense do their job, and I am going to be the CEO. That's when the success took off. So as long as he doesn't say, you know what, no, I want to be the offensive guy as well now. I want this, this, and this on my plate too. As long as he stays back in his staying as a CEO and not try to get too big for his britches, I think the success will follow here because we all know Eli's a great recruiter. There's no denying that Eli can get out there and recruit and bring great players to Mizzou. The issue is, can you put him in the right spot to succeed? It wasn't working when he was doing the play calls, right? That was not working when he had too much on his plate. When he started to delegate and bring in the right guys for the job, that's when the success at Mizzou, in my opinion, really started to take off.
Well, and if he's a CEO coach, then it's about, you know, hiring the right coaches, hiring the right offensive and defensive coaches. And that took him a little bit. I mean, it took him a while to figure that thing out. I mean, how many different defensive coordinators were running through, you know, Mizzou before, you know, you land on somebody that you feel like, is good enough. And Kirby Moore, as, you know, the offensive coordinator, right? And they've had some success, especially last year, with how good, the defense was and the number of people that are, returning. And we'll see what, Batoon looks like, you know? I mean, we'll find out. So, but there's a co, right? It's Batoon and, the linebackers coach.
DJ Moore.
DJ Smith. Yep. DJ Smith and Batum. Well, that's fine, but it's going to be Batum. Whatever. We'll see what he does, because they have tried to find defensive coordinators and defensive coordinators and defensive coordinators, and then they find one. And unfortunately, it only lasted a little bit. It didn't last very long for them to have that defensive coordinator, and he was awesome. But things happen; people move on. It's reality. He has to continue to find guys that can coach the offense, coach the defense. If he's going to be the CEO, then you've got to put guys in position. I am not comparing the two, just simply the strategy behind it and the way they went about he went about his program. I'm not saying he's this guy, but just for an example, Nick Saban was the CEO, was the head coach, but he brought in defensive coordinators and offensive coordinators that got the job done with high-level players, okay? So it's not that. I'm just saying as an example of somebody that wasn't the play caller. Right, so a lot of times this guy is the offensive coordinator. This guy's a head coach and he's a play caller on offense. This guy's a head coach and he's the play caller on defense. Okay, so he's not necessarily a CEO. He's on the offense, or he's just a guy that focuses a lot on the defense. And so the offensive coordinator is sort of like the head coach of the offense. Where when Eli was the offensive coordinator and head coach, your defensive guy was sort of the head coach of the defense. Your coordinator was sort of the head coach, because Eli's spending his time on the offense. He's coordinating that. And if he's splitting time between, okay, I got to coordinate the offense, but now I got to go over here to the defense because I'm the head coach, well, now you're taking away something from the offense. Well, yeah, but we also got an offensive coordinator there. Okay, so pick one. And so different coaches go about, their styles, and he wanted to call the plays. I'm glad that he figured out it wasn't working, that somebody else needs to come in and call the plays so he can be the head coach. But the turnover at defensive coordinator has been stunning. They found the guy last year, but, the relationships and things and guys look at opportunities and they move on. You have to continue to find that guy if he's going to be the CEO. Finding the defensive head coach isn't as important as it was early on when he was the offensive coordinator, but he is an offensive guy, where Nick Saban was a defensive guy and secondary was his baby. So you were going to find some safeties and cornerbacks at Alabama, because Nick Saban was going to be around there. But he was also the guy that was overseeing everything.
Well, and to an extent, you almost want your defensive coordinator and your offensive coordinator. I'm not saying you want them to leave, but that means that you're having success at your program most likely. Like, if you're losing DCs and OCs, that means that they're getting head coaching jobs elsewhere, right? That's typically the thought process. Now, it's not always going to happen, but that's the thought process, right? As everyone moves up, it happens in the NFL all the time. That was why when the Eagles last year, they lost both their OC and DC to head coaching positions. Well, they hired the wrong guys. They took a step back. I mean, you have to continuously hire the right guy, as you're mentioning here. I'm intrigued to see how this plays out. Again, I think Eli showed a lot by saying, I'm done with the head coach or with the play calling. It's just not working. That takes some humility when that was kind of what you were brought in to do. But college is different than the pros, for example, right? Like, Sean McVay can do that in the NFL because you're not out recruiting. In college, you're doing everything. You're kind of the GM as well, right? So there's so much more on your plate. I like that Eli is now delegating again, and I actually like that that Veach, Laird Veach, not Brett Veach, brought that up in his presser.
Yeah, either Veach. That's fine. We're having a lot of Veach conversations over the last week or so. Look, he found Blake Baker. Now go find the next one. And see if you can continue that going. But also, you talked about 8 wins. Would that be a disappointment for Missouri fans? And I think there's a level of expectation. And I don't think it's I don't think they're out over their skis by saying, 8 wins would be a disappointment this year, because they showed they can get to 11 last year. You've seen it with Gary Pinkel of getting to double-digit wins. Big 12, SEC, whatever, that's fine, I get it. But you showed you can win 11 last year in the SEC. And I think it shows Laird Veach what he's walking into as the athletics director of what the expectations are for football. It also speaks to Eli Drinkwitz and to where he should understand the level of expectation. I think it's a good thing. It's a great thing for Mizzou to have the expectations of 8 wins would be a disappointment, because it holds people to a higher standard, and it is not delusional. when, you know, Vanderbilt saying eight wins is the standard or a disappointment, that's delusional. Missouri, at times, when they were going through the Barry Odom and they were going through all of the issues on campus in the mid-2000s when Gary Pinkel was, you know, retiring and was dealing with cancer, at that time it was like, you know, you better get to 10 wins every year. Like, okay, well, let's be realistic now of what's going on with the coach they have, et cetera. Now we've seen it with Mizzou. We saw it earlier with Gary Pinkel. The recruiting is there. Having a level of expectation is good and healthy, and they are not the same programs. Again, I'm using extreme comparisons or extreme examples in terms of what the comparison is. KU basketball has a extremely high level of expectation. And if Bill Self wasn't reaching that, he wouldn't be there. We love Bill Self, right? Bill Self is a fantastic coach. I'm a big Bill Self fan. But if he wasn't getting it done and winning Big 12 regular seasons and losing early in the tournament and didn't have Final Fours and didn't win a couple national championships, like, he's gone. There comes a time. At Kentucky, Calipari was gone because the expectations are so high. Is that out of whack? Maybe. Yeah, certainly. But that expectation says you better come in here and succeed. And if you don't, we'll find somebody else who will succeed. Maybe that drives some coaches away. That's fine. Again, that might be the extreme level. But if the expectations are, oh, you know, we're just going to go out and have fun and let's see what you can do. Okay, well, then you start accepting mediocrity. And if you're accepting mediocrity, then you aren't the program that you could ultimately strive to be. And I think Missouri got into a little bit of a rut before they got Eli of, okay, this is mediocre, and you know what, just 6-6 isn't good enough. Go find somebody else. Okay, so what kind of program do you think you are? Well, you know what, if you're a Missouri fan, you look at it and go, well, I think they're a better program than 6-6 in the SEC, so go find somebody. Eli Drinkwitz comes in and goes 6-6 and 6-6, and it's like, all right, well, it's not good enough. He needs to do something now, or you got to find a replacement. 11-2. Okay, now back it up.
Yeah.
Now back it up. Now do something else. Because there should be that level of expectation. K-State has a football level of expectation. Because if you're Chris Klieman, you can go to the college football playoff. And if you're finishing fourth and fifth in the Big 12 the next 5 or 6 years, you may love Chris Klieman. That's not good enough. It's simply not good enough for what K-State can do. K-State fans know that. Chris Klieman knows that. Gene Taylor knows that. Those are understood expectations. And I think if you're Laird Veach, it's an understood expectation of what football needs to be at Mizzou. And, you know, I appreciated the answer of football. It's imperative to be successful in the SEC or wherever for the finances and the brand of the university.
Well, and also point out, you look at Mizzou's schedule this year, it's lighter than it could be, right? You have Oklahoma at home. Obviously, you travel to Tuscaloosa at Alabama. But then you look at some of the other toss-up games. You know, it's at Texas A&M. A&M perpetually is higher ranked in the preseason than during the actual season. This is a schedule that lines up favorably for Mizzou to back that up. K-State, same thing. K-State, you're talking about expectations. They have expectations again this year, and quite frankly, the Jayhawks do as well. You know, you look at the Jayhawks, they have four games actually they're playing at Arrowhead, which is going to be exciting for them. But Lance Leipold has done a good job. He's backed it up, right? I thought last year they might take a step back. I said, KU fans, don't be disappointed if they take a step back and say, you know, maybe Leipold's not the guy. They didn't take that massive step back. They kept the train rolling. The Jayhawks, quite frankly, they have the right guy. Like, they're building something there in Lawrence with Lance Leipold. I think all three teams have all three of the head coaching positions figured out, which I don't know how often we can say throughout history. All three teams have had all three head coaches. They have the right guy. I do think Eli's the right guy. I do think Klieman and I do think Lance Leipold are the right guys. It's kind of fun having expectations for all three local programs right here.
Yeah, and the health that's there. The health, the expectation, the feeling of, you know, just it's not a wing and a prayer. You know, Lance Leipold, 2 wins, 6 wins, 9 wins. And if you're having that success, well, guess what? You're in the running to win the Big 12. You win 5-4, you're in the running to win the Big 12. And you win the Big 12, you're in the college football playoff. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility. I don't think it's absurd. 3 years ago, you're a fool. You're an idiot. Les Miles is 0-9. All right, he sucks. You know, this is, I guess that was, his last year was 2020. So that would have been March, April of 2020 when that whole thing went down. So that was going on 4 years ago. 4 years ago. You know, I think in 5 years, KU could be competing for a college football playoff. What are you smoking? How much did it cost? You know, just to sort of, I'm just curious, just general questions here. That would have been the reaction. But now, like, could KU compete for the college football playoff next year? Well, there's an automatic qualifier from the Big 12. You win the conference. And competing is not the same as, well, they're the favorites to do it. I mean, we talk about the Royals. Can the Royals compete for a playoff spot? Well, you go 500, you can compete for a playoff spot. Yes, it depends on how close they are in August and September. It's competing for that. Doesn't mean they're going to win it. Doesn't mean they're going to win 90 games or go to the Super Bowl, but they can compete for it. And if KU is 5-4 in conference, well, then they're competing for, you know, being up there in a chance to play for the Big 12 championship. That's competing for it. And if you win the Big 12, you are going to the college football playoff. That's the beauty of this reworking and reshaping of the college landscape with now the Power Four conferences. You know, and that you have that that opportunity. I want to play one more as, you know, we're here in Kansas City. And when Missouri went to the SEC, it was a huge change. And I'll be honest, I wasn't in favor of it. I've talked about that before. And I hated that, you know, Kansas City would lose the Missouri presence, especially for the Big 12 tournament, et cetera. Stephen St. John this morning, I thought it was a fantastic question because it's something that I think the Missouri athletic director has to be aware of. And by being around K-State, maybe he is aware of it. But Stephen asked Laird Veach about the importance of the KC Metro and the Missouri relationship.
There's no question it's critically important. Whether it's we need to reestablish or establish further, you know, it has been a while since I've been there and been in the market, you know, certainly not since the real SEC change has happened from a Mizzou standpoint. Although I will tell you, in my early days when I was at Mizzou, you know, as a young fundraiser, Kansas City was my market. So,
that's right.
So we kind of split up the state, and so I built a bunch of relationships over there, and so it's really clear to me how important that is, and the passion and the support and fan base that exists. So we have to. I mean, that's one of the advantages we have as an institution is we are the one flagship in the middle of a big state with two, you know, big metro areas, you know, down the road on I-70, a couple hours either way. So, you know, that there's a ton of opportunity in that, whether that is, you know, developing, you know, donor relationships, corporate relationships, and just having that presence, you know, and as well from a recruiting standpoint. So it's obviously a critical need, and we got to make a ton of effort to be there. And one of the things you'll hear from me time and again is, you know, we can't do that from Columbia. You know, we're going to ask folks from Kansas City, Mizzou fans to come over and make that trip a lot, right? So we need to reciprocate. We need to be there, you know, be with the people, be out shaking hands and, you know, thanking them for their support and asking them for more because it is an incredibly competitive environment from a revenue standpoint. It is, you know, whether you like it or not, that is in many ways the front lines of college athletics competition now is revenue, whether that's NIL, whether that's investment in coaches and facilities. You have to have it to be competitive. So we need to be out, you know, building those relationships and asking for help.
So that answer there, if you're a Mizzou fan in Kansas City, you've got to love the response there about, you know, and he mentioned, look, it's been a while, so Missouri and the SEC, not necessarily familiar, so we need to reestablish or establish further the relationship that's there, and that'll take him some time to really figure out and get a good handle on that. And as he mentioned, his time at Mizzou and fundraising, his market was the Kansas City market. But what he said there that I thought was really important to hear, and I appreciated him saying in that, you know, building the relationships and whether that be with the business side, whether that be donation side, just simply the fan side, saying that, you know, they can't do that from Columbia, that they're going to ask people from Kansas City to go to Columbia and support the Missouri Tigers. Then they have to reciprocate. Then they have to be around the area showing that the city, the area is important to them and not just an expectation of, well, we're Mizzou. You're a Mizzou fan. So why don't you come here to Columbia and support us? You should be supporting us. Okay. Well, you know, this is an area that was sort of felt like it was left behind by Mizzou. I don't think there's any question that there were a number of fans that felt like when Mizzou went to the SEC, then there was even more focus to the East. And whether you enjoy, hate, whatever, believe in the rivalry of St. Louis and Kansas City, you know, there was a feeling of, okay, well, now everything is going to be more dedicated to the East as they're looking East in the conference and not necessarily back West. You know, even St. Louis getting the SEC tournament, you know, for a year when Missouri got in there. And to hear him say that of like, it's vital, it's important, and we can't do it from Columbia and just expect there to be this base in Kansas City to go to Columbia. We've got to show that it's important. We've got to be there. Like, we got to go to them and reciprocate and be around the people in the area.
Yeah, that's awesome. You love to hear. I mean, you love hearing that. Again, if you can get Iowa State down here for the Big 12 tournament, do more. Mm-hmm. Do more for Mizzou. If Iowa State can do it for their fans, again, it's only one weekend, but still, like, I would love to see Mizzou fans pack someplace for a game, for anything. Just show that they care. That would be awesome. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you know what? It's and good on KU and Kansas State, because when Mizzou went to the SEC, they saw an opening to pounce and say, well, now we can be more established in the area if there's going to be, you know, an opening to a degree of Mizzou heading more east, then we'll establish it. And if that's recruiting, if it's fundraising, if whatever it is, business relationships, certainly it has felt like there has been a bigger feel of KU and K-State, even football-wise, whatever, in Kansas City. Maybe that's just a perception. Maybe that's not reality. Maybe that's just a feel. Maybe it's just a feel because they're not playing. Missouri's not playing teams around here. You know, they're not playing. They're not going west to play games, or going to Iowa State, or playing Oklahoma State. I know they're playing Kansas State, playing Kansas, etc. But in conference, maybe that feel is they're playing so many teams from the Southeast and in the SEC. It just feels like there's more of a connection there. And there have been an issue with recruiting in Kansas City. And I'm glad that Eli has reestablished some of those connections, because there have been good players in the Kansas City area in football that I think Missouri didn't do enough to recruit.
Yeah,
and the previous regime before Eli, I think quite frankly ignored too much of the area. That's just, you know, my personal opinion, but I'm really happy that Eli is you know, recruiting around here, because there are damn fine football players in the area, and we see it when teams from out of state, teams from out of the metro, not just out of state but out of the metro, Oklahoma, Alabama, Michigan grabbing Ronnie Bell, you know, things like that. You know, you're like, you know, you see there's players, because if teams from different conferences are coming here to recruit, then why the hell aren't you? We need to take a timeout. We'll come back. We're hanging out at Trailside RV. I want to talk a little bit more about Jared Wiley. We mentioned it just briefly with Matt Derrick, but what the Chiefs offense could look like and their, the view of importance, but how much weight that they put into how often they're going to run 12 and 13 personnel. Is Irv Smith, is that signing an indication while drafting Jared Wiley that they want to do that? Was it just Irv Smith was signed because if they don't draft Jared Wiley or draft a tight end, that you still feel like you've got three pretty good ones? I do want to address that a little bit in just how much of a game plan and how much of this season coming up you view from maybe some issues that took place last year that the Chiefs might be looking to fix this year, if it is just as simple as they signed Irv Smith and they drafted Jared Wiley, and is that now a bigger factor and more important in how they want to go about game planning and playing different teams? We're hanging out at Trailside RV off I-70 exit 24 in Grain Valley. It is the 40th anniversary open house starting tomorrow at 9 o'clock. Parts and service seminars, gifts for each family that shows up, door prize drawings, and special discounts for in-stock parts and accessories, special finance incentives, special anniversary pricing, all of that going on at the open house. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. We'll talk a little more Chiefs football, and then we got the cuts before the show is over. More Zone next. All right, we continue right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Jason Anderson with you, Sterling Holmes, Dylan Michaels, hanging out at Trailside RV. We got cuts coming your way in the next segment. I-70 exit 24 in Grain Valley is where Trailside RV is. If you're in the market thinking about it, maybe thinking about being in the market. I don't know. Maybe you're already in the market. Maybe you want a new one. Trailside RV, the spot for you, the leader in premium RVs, campers, RV parts, service, repairs, and more. And this is the time for you to do it because tomorrow at 9 a.m. in the morning starts their open house, the 40th anniversary celebration. They are kicking that thing off tomorrow, 9 o'clock in the morning. And with that 40th anniversary celebration, there will be parts and service seminars, gifts for each family, door prizes, drawings for accessories. And, of course, if you're going to be here shopping, they've got special discounts for in-stock parts and accessories. They've got special finance incentives. They have special anniversary pricing on all RVs in stock. They've got super manager special discounts on certain models. They'll have food here as well. It is Trailside RV. TrailsideRV.com is the website to go and check that out. So I wanted to talk a little bit about Jared Wiley, and it'll be something that we'll be watching and talking about as training camp and certainly the season gets here. This was a team, Sterling, that, you know, when they ran 13 personnel, Blake Bell was on the field, and he's a good blocker. Okay, he's a good blocker, but we know, you know, route running, etc., isn't his specialty. So 12 personnel, 13 personnel. We know that Andy Reid loves his multiple tight end sets. They still run predominantly 11 personnel with the three wide receivers. Okay, so you know, last year they had 62% of their personnel was 11 personnel. In 2022, that was only 55%. So it actually went up this last year. And I don't know if that's, you know, one, you've got Travis Kelce that missed some games and wasn't playing as many snaps. So how often do you want Blake Bell out there in 12 personnel? How often do you want Blake Bell out there in 13 personnel? So a couple of things to think about with that. But it was also the success rate, Sterling, of the personnel groupings that were lacking last year. So in 2022, if you look at when they ran 12 personnel, they were the most efficient in terms of expected points added offense in the NFL out of 12 personnel, and they ran it 30% of the time. This year in 12 personnel, it wasn't like they were terrible, but they were 7th in the NFL at only 0.1. They were almost a half a point expected points added out of they were almost a quarter of a point expected points added out of 12 personnel last year. It dropped to 0.1. 13 personnel is where you see the biggest difference from 2022 to 2023. In 2022, they were at almost a half a point expected points added per play out of 13 personnel. This year, they dropped to minus 0.8. They were in negative expected points added out of 13 personnel this year, where they were at almost a half a point per play added when they were in 13 personnel. They ran it fewer times this year than they did a year ago. If you're not as good at it, especially you don't want to do it, I just wonder how much a Jared Wiley can impact that in 13 personnel, running it more, being more effective, because you'd have multiple guys out there that can run routes, can catch, and can block, and they're pretty successful running out of 13 personnel as well. You know, Isaiah Pacheco was successful last year when they ran the ball in 13 personnel, and that's even when the defense is sort of, to a degree, expecting it.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I mean, Jared Wiley last year, 520 yards, 47 receptions, 8 touchdowns. My one concern is it's almost Xavier Leggett style, because that happened all in his fifth year, right? His first four years in college, not great. His senior year at TCU, when he, I guess, moved from Texas to TCU, uptick there, 245 yards, 4 touchdowns, not great, but obviously moving on a national championship team, or at least caliber team in TCU. Then last year was his explosion. I would like to see that, but I do think his floor is much higher as a receiver than Blake Bell. While the blocking might not quite be there as Blake Bell, I still like what he brings to the table.
Mm-hmm. We'll take a timeout, come back. We got cuts coming up next. All right, Trailside RV, our location today, I-70, exit 24, because they are kicking off the 40th anniversary celebration open house tomorrow morning, starting at 9 o'clock in the morning. And if you were in the market, thinking about being in the market, don't know if you should be in the market for an RV with the spring, summer months coming up and some road trips, etc., Trailside RV, the spot for you, the leader in premium RVs, campers, RV parts, service, repairs, and more. They've got, with their anniversary open house, special discounts for in-stock parts and accessories, special finance incentives, special anniversary pricing. They've got super managers, special discounts on certain models. It's here this weekend, tomorrow, 9 o'clock in the morning until 4 o'clock, some food as well. So make sure you come check out Trailside RV. All right, the cuts before the show, the week of shows is over. Dylan, take it away.
I got to ride on an elevator with Billy Crystal. Yankees game. That was an old Yankee Stadium, way better than the new one.
You got zero reaction to the Billy Crystal name drop from those two.
I'm not a music guy.
All time.
I love Garrett Dieter.
Just for a couple of people.
Yeah.
Do you do anything else but tweet? Do you do anything else?
I'm sure it's generating a lot of revenue
for
these people.
And tickle yourself in the balls and tweet.
I don't even know what he was talking about, but that's amazing. I think he was talking about people tweeting at him, but I don't know.
Gurley says if it's real stupid, it fits Nate perfect.
By the way, I got a picture of Gurley on the beach wearing a Kool-Aid Man t-shirt, which has never been more appropriate.
Oh, Jesus.
Electric.
Oh, Border Patrol showing up. There we go.
By the way, did you hear where Chiefsaholic has got to pay the teller $10.8 million?
$10 million, yeah. How about that?
That restitution is huge.
Adam is great. Adam's so good, man. Adam's so good. Keep growing.
Well, I think one of the reasons she's so hard to contain, Greg, this probably seems like a foreign concept to you, but she passes really, really well.
Wow. That's actually a really good dig, and it's 100% correct.
You know it's good when you're just like, yeah, it was good.
Wow.
You got me.
You're like, wow, okay. No response. You got me.
Nails.
Andrew, that's a winner. You got Uranus and Bruce Weber. Sometimes those guys are interchangeable. We'll tell you.
Same thing.
No lies detected.
All right, what is this dude's name? We'll go with, you want older or newer?
Let's do older.
Oh, you want older. All right. What is Duke Snyder's real name?
Looks like Edwin Donald Snyder.
Is that what it looks like?
Is that what it looks like right there?
Is that what it looks like right there? Charles, did it look like that or do you think it's that?
Kind of both of those, actually.
It looks like. Oh, we've never had a dead giveaway of somebody Googling like that before in Sports or Leisure. That was a dead giveaway.
Let's say noon. Let's have a nooner here.
Well, I can't get a nooner done in 3 minutes.
I accept the challenge.
Bring it on.
Anything else, Dylan?
That was his dark horse. He was sticking his flag in him.
Why was he doing that?
It
seems highly illegal. That seems like that is against the law. Like that is a violation of somebody's personal rights and their.
It was Baker Mayfield style, just sticking his flag in him.
I see.
And potentially without the girthy groin that's behind the plate on.
I think he's talking about Salvi, but I can't be sure. We'll take it. We'll take a couple of day time out. You know what? We'll be back on Monday. How about that? The program comes up next. Come check out Trailside RV I-70 Exit 24. The open house starting tomorrow at 9 a.m.